Colts Hidden Killers Investigates. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
In August of 2022, an Arizona Department of Public Safety trooper pulled over an SUV on a highway near Flagstaff. The vehicle was hauling a wooden cargo trailer. Someone, a passerby, a witness, the details vary by report, had spotted something that stopped them cold. Small fingers reaching through the slats of the trailer door. I mean, just this is a horror scene. Especially when you really wrap your mind around what it is. For a second, like the thought of like The Walking Dead comes to mind, and they're like, oh, they're, but it's not zombies. Inside the SUV were two young women and two young girls. Inside the trailer, a sealed, unventilated space with a makeshift toilet, a sofa, and camping chairs. Troopers found three more girls, ages 11 to 14. According to reporting from journalists on the scene, each of the girls was wearing a wedding ring. The man behind the wheel, Samuel Bateman. He was arrested for child endangerment, and then in a detail that should make you question every assumption you have about how the system protects children. He posted bond and went home. We talk about this all the time on this show, or on Hidden Killers. There's so many assumptions that we have about how our system works. And we tell ourselves these things because, you know, I think reality, if we were like, well, the system's inept, it lets horrible predators go, and they're not, I mean, there's so many things that, like, you wouldn't sleep at night. And at some point, you got to find some sort of peace, even if it is delusional. We can hope, though, right? We can hope it does. I guess it's something to shoot for. This is room for improvement material. Because somehow, somewhere, someone in the system said, oh, yeah, the kids that are in the trailer back there with the unventilation and they're, you know, trying to get out underneath the door, yeah, you can go home. Nothing to see here. You always got to question the police departments that are entrenched in cult-like communities or an atmosphere where there's a cult-like presence to it on the decisions that they're making, especially when possibly protecting the image of that community, which may contain the cult. Because the community might be somewhat proud of that cult because the rest of the world doesn't look like it as a cult. Northwest Arkansas. They've gotten better. But I'm going to say for years, the protection of the Duggars by the employment of the Duggars for private security, that was a bit questionable. It was a bit questionable as to how deep anyone looked or has looked into that family. Because, hey, it's like the claim to fame. Other than Walmart and Tyson and all the things that you actually, you know, can be proud of as far as, you know, business developments and starting from scratch and ingenuity. Somehow a lot of folks in this area are like, oh, the Duggars. And they're Jesus-y. You see how that works? You see how that can happen? I mean, you have communities like this where it's so entrenched and like the whole damn thing is a cult. And you have somewhere like the cult's famous. The cult's kind of the selling point to some folks. Because it's not looked at as a cult. It's looked at as some lovely colloquial little folks. It's all great until it's not. I'm not saying anything negative right now about that because they are investigating. Pretty good so far, I would say. We'll keep watching because now the feet are to the fire. Now the people are watching. And we're going to see how closely they need to look at that family, and we'll keep reporting on that. That's a whole different cult. Let's get back to this one. And while we do, give me your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Weigh in. Love to get your opinion. We read them. And we thank you so much for chatting with us. Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. And press subscribe while you're listening or watching this if you're finding it valuable. So, as I was saying, he posted bond and went home. Back to Colorado City. Back to the community where he had more than 20 wives, at least 10 of them minors. Back to the house where 9 children were living under his control. He was a man caught hauling children in a cargo trailer like livestock, and the system's immediate response was to let him walk. It took 2 more weeks for federal agents to catch up. In September of 2022, the FBI raided Bateman's home in Colorado City. He was arrested again, this time on federal charges of evidence tampering and obstruction. Between his first arrest and his second, prosecutors say he had used a recorded jail phone line to instruct his followers to delete his Signal account and destroy incriminating messages. Well, you're this godly leader, why would anyone have to delete anything you say? It should be kept as prophecy or scripture, right? I mean, not deleted. He knew the investigation was coming, and his first instinct wasn't to run. It was to order his people to burn the evidence. 9 children were removed from Bateman's home and placed into Arizona Department of Child and Safety custody. During forensic interviews, none of the girls disclosed the abuse by Bateman. One said she was present and partially not clothed during what she described as a encounter, but she did not identify herself as a victim. The FBI, however, has found their journals, personalized diaries or personal diaries that had been seized during the raid, and the journals told a rather different story when nobody was looking. Entries in the girls' own handwriting described intimate interactions with Bateman. Some entries included dates. Some included the names of other people present. The written record contradicted the spoken testimony, and investigators believe they understood why. The older girls had influenced the younger ones not to speak, not out of malice, but out of conditioning. The children had been taught that Bateman was the prophet, that his authority came from God, that to speak against him was to speak against the divine order, even separated from him, even placed in state custody, even sitting across from trained forensic interviewers, the psychological hold remained intact. And that hold was about to be tested in the most dramatic way possible. From his federal detention facility in Florence, Arizona, it almost sounds like the intro to like the Grammys. From the federal detention facility in Florence, Arizona, R. Kelly! From the federal detention facility in Florence, Arizona, Bateman shared a pod with multiple other inmates. He had access to institutional tablets, device inmates that would use to communicate with the outside world. Other inmates later noted that Bateman monopolized the tablets, spending hours on them. Prosecutors allege he used those tablets to orchestrate what came next. But wait, there's more. Because of course there is. When you're a monster, you know no bounds. In late November 2022, roughly 2 months after his arrest, 3 of Bateman's adult wives executed a plan. Naomi Bestine, Donna Barlow, and Moretta Rose Johnson helped 8 of the 9 girls in foster care flee their assigned group homes. The children vanished from Arizona's child protective system for days, then weeks. Nobody knew where they were. Think about that sequence for a moment. A man is sitting in a federal detention facility. He's been arrested twice, and he's under investigation for interstate child abuse conspiracy. The children he victimized have been removed from his home and placed in state custody specifically to protect them from him and from behind bars using a state-issued shared tablet on a recorded line. He successfully directed 3 women to extract those children from the foster care system and disappear with them across state lines. System's working great, ain't it? The FBI tracked the operation through financial records and digital traces. They found a business card connected to a community called Velociraptor, run by one of Bateman's followers. They requested emergency records from Airbnb and found a reservation in Spokane, Washington, hundreds of miles from Arizona. On December 1st, the Spokane County Sheriff's Office sent a sergeant to the address for what they called a knock and talk. Nobody answered. But the sergeant saw a vehicle leaving the property, and he stopped it. Thank God. Inside was Moretta Rose Johnson, who was over 18 at the time, but had reportedly been married to Bateman when she was a minor. All eight of the missing girls. Think of that next time you rent out your Airbnb. Who just might be camping there? We get all types here. Eight children driven from Arizona to Washington State, hidden in a vacation rental, booked through a follower's Airbnb account. Recovered by a sheriff's sergeant who happened to catch a car pulling out of a driveway during a welfare check. If that timing had been off by 5 minutes, if Johnson had left earlier, if the sergeant had arrived later, if the FBI's Airbnb records request had taken one more day to process, those girls might have vanished into whatever exit plan Bateman's network had waiting. Canada was not far from Spokane. Court records indicate Bateman had previously sent followers to conferences in Canada and Mexico. He'd instructed people to obtain passports, and Bateman, sitting in a jail cell in Arizona, would have won. The three women were charged with kidnapping. All three faced potential life sentences. Donna Barlow's attorney argued her client was a victim of Bateman, who believed she was rescuing the girls from abuse at the hands of the state. The state can do some pretty nasty shit. But somehow she thought that was worse than what was going on. What do you even think? Like, what do you... When this type of bleh is going on over here, what exactly do you think the state's doing over here? Is it like the Exorcist? Like, your mother sucks in heck. You know, is that what's going on? Is that what you're thinking is happening over here under state foster care? Because, I mean, there's not always the greatest shit going on over there. But somehow you think that's better. And you're religious and have morals, suppose. Again, brainwashing. It's amazing. See what it can do for you. Ask your doctor today if brainwashing is right for me. Moretta Rose Johnson's attorney made a similar argument. Johnson had been married to Bateman as a minor. Her own parents had allowed it, and her siblings had been given to Bateman as well. The defense framing was consistent. These women were not co-conspirators. They were products of the same system that victimized the children they helped abduct. Flora Jessup, the FDLS survivor and advocate, put it bluntly. She said the women must face consequences for what they did, but she also said a life sentence was the wrong answer. They were born into this cult, she said. The only thing they knew is that little box they were in their entire life. They deserve better than to be victimized by him and then re-victimized by the state. The kidnapping didn't just expose Bateman's continued reach from behind bars. It exposed a cascading failure across every institution that was supposed to protect these children. Law enforcement had questioned Bateman in 2020 and accepted the parents' lies. The initial arrest in Flagstaff resulted in bond release. A man caught transporting children in a sealed trailer walked free within days. The foster care system placed the children in group homes but could not prevent a coordinated extradition directed by a man in federal custody using an institutional communication device that was supposedly monitored at every single checkpoint, every moment, where the system clearly had a chance to hold the line and say, wait a second here, not this time. Not these kids. It gave way. The architecture of child protection buckled under the weight of a community built to resist it. And underneath all those failures is a deeper, more unsettling one. The girls themselves didn't resist the kidnapping. According to court documents, the children went willingly with the women who came for them. They didn't know any better. They thought it was a road trip, not because they were physically forced, but because they believed they were going home, going back to the community, going to the prophet, to the only life they had ever known. The foster care system was trying to protect children who did not yet understand that they needed protection. Children who had been taught that the outside world was the enemy. And that Bateman's world, the world where they were called wives and made to participate in acts no child should witness, let alone experience, was God's plan for them. That's the cruelest dimension of cult-based child abuse. The victims don't always know they're victims. The conditioning runs so deep that freedom feels like exile and rescue feels like punishment. Breaking that cycle takes more than a courtroom verdict. It takes years of deprogramming, therapy, education, and across to a world, and access, rather, to a world these children were never allowed to see. Which brings us to the moment or remedies this story, or at least brings us to. At Bateman's sentencing hearing, in December of 24, three teenage girls gave victim impact statements. These were girls who had been inside Bateman's group, girls who had been given to him by their own fathers, girls who had been removed from his home, kidnapped from foster care, recovered in Washington State, and ultimately placed with families who loved them and let them grow. One of them, a girl now in high school, read from a list she had written in red ink on lined paper. She told Bateman about everything she had been able to do since his arrest. She got her driver's license. She wears whatever clothes she wants. She dyed her hair. She joined a school play. Line by line, she read him a catalog of ordinary freedoms, the kind of things that any teenager takes for granted, that she had been denied for years because of a man with a Bentley and a God complex decided it was his property. And then she looked at him and said, "Now you can see I never needed you. And I hope you get everything you deserve, which is absolutely nothing." After the sentencing, the teenagers hugged and cried quietly. They were escorted out of the courthouse by members of Bikers Against Child Abuse, volunteers in leather vests who showed up to protect the child victims at legal proceedings. No one in the courtroom appeared to be there in support of Bateman. The judge, Susan Bronvich, had already called him the worst kind of abuser and told him he had stripped these girls of their innocence and childhood. But the prosecutor made one more observation that lands a little bit harder than the sentence itself. She noted that the parents of some of the victimized girls still came to court hearings, not to support their daughters, to support Bateman. The man who abused their children still had their loyalty. Well, some people you just can't fix, right? The girls have become their own advocates because the people who owed them protection had chosen the prophet instead. That's horrible. But quite honestly, let me say this. In this context, you're going to go, "Oh my God, how could a parent choose themselves over their children?" They do it every freaking day. It's just not necessarily an occult atmosphere. They do. Every single day. It's all around us. And there's plenty of parents who don't, that put their children first. Some put them almost too far ahead, where it's like, "No, you need to be a parent here for these kids. They're not parenting you." But we do see this sort of behavior every single day, where the parent is going to choose the boyfriend, the girlfriend, the money, the whatever they're going to do outside of the house, and neglect their children with them. I mean, it's not saying you can't do things outside of your house, but when it's like you have no relationship with your kid, because all you're doing is what makes you feel good, as if you were still a single person without children. We see it every single day. Absent fathers, absent mothers. Sitting somewhere else doing their own thing. Playing the victim. Well, they choose themselves over their children. It happens in situations outside of cults all the time. It just, it's pretty evident here. That image though, when it's this striking, when it is this striking, and especially with this sort of context, this is what makes this far worse. When you know the abuse your child suffered, and you're still on the side of the abuser. I don't think there's any fixing that. I think at that point, those parents, I don't see any other reason not to. I mean, what benefit do they give to society at that point? And really, the sad reality is for those kids, the best damn thing for them, unfortunately, they were brought into the world by narcissistic monsters. But they don't have to be that. And the best odds for them not to become that, not to be that, is for those people not to be their parents. It's heartbreaking and horrible, but if that's who that is, we need to accept that that's who those people are. They're narcissistic little monsters. And they can go die by narcissism, however that may be. The best thing for those children is not to have any connection there, not have any sort of relationship there, because there's nothing good that's going to happen. Nothing. Not a thing. Other than shame and regret and self-blame over here on the survivor part, and over here someone who is just going to try and shove their warped image of the world and their expectations of their child down their throat even more and try and make them feel horrible. There is nothing good that comes of a relationship like that with a toxic parent and a child that's not in that relationship. Nothing. That image. Parents sitting in the courtroom backing the man who assaulted their children, while those children stand at a podium and speak for themselves, is the most complete portrait of what a cult does to a family. It doesn't just harm the victims. It inverts the moral order of an entire community. It makes parents into suppliers, children into survivors, and a federal courtroom into the first place some of those kids ever experienced, an adult choosing them over the profit. The fingers through the trailer slats. Think of that. That's the image that will define this case in the public memory. And it should. It's visceral. It's specific. And it crystallizes everything about what Bateman did. But the kidnapping from foster care tells you something deeper. That even after intervention, even after arrest, even after children are physically removed from a predator's home, the reach of a cult leader's authority doesn't end on a cell door. Bateman controlled people so absolutely that his wives risked life sentences to bring children back to a man who was hurting them. That kind of obedience doesn't come from a charisma alone. It comes from a system that spent generations perfecting it. And until the system itself is addressed, not just the man who exploited it, the cycle doesn't end. It just waits for the next time. Give me your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love to continue the conversation right there. And be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast or watching us. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss any of our reporting. We got more to come in this case. One more chapter on these dandy folks. And there's many more to come on many others. We'll continue the conversation, like I said, in the comment section. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.